testimony's coming.
I called on him, but...
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Eric Carlson with the League of Oregon Cities. I don't know where we are on the proposed amendments because I received them late yesterday afternoon. All I want to express to you is a concern that they would have an impact on the operation of municipal courts, increasing the cost on municipal courts and reducing the ability of those courts to provide services to their local citizens. They look extensive enough to me that they deserve interim study rather than enactment in this at this period.
Got to the temple there.
Right, yes. That's argument number three, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I should just give them my number after this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Leek, why don't you come back up? It's obvious to the chair and I believe to the committee that there is extensive opposition to this bill, especially parts of the bill having to do with the elimination of the evaluation program. And the proposed amendments also speak to a court being able to keep its own program. But Mr. Leek, make your pitch for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's Plan B and Plan C. I won't attempt to deal with a variety of issues that have been raised here. I think there are serious errors in some of the testimony that's been presented to you. I think it's been useful that you've heard it, and I think it would have been useful for you to hear some further testimony about diversion and how some people believe it's working and other people believe it's a miserable failure. Suffice it to say that the system that's been created by the legislature to deal with drunk drivers is one that's created a bunch of clients, and those are the people who work within the system, and that the people who are being served by those clients, the product at the end, are continuing to drink and drive. And something needs to be done about that, and indeed, whether it's in the interim or whether it's in the next session, this committee or another committee needs to look at that delivery system and the cost of that system altogether. However, having said all that, Plan B, that is to leave intact the current evaluator system altogether. That is to strip from the 131A3 dated 6889 that you see from you all reference change, all changes that refer to the evaluators, and simply pay for the estimated $190,000 in the first year and $160,000 in subsequent years for the convictees and for the cost study out of the intoxicated driver fund. Now, we've heard from Mr. Campbell, he comes in kind of like the gentleman from Fantasy Island who says, the plane. Mr. Campbell comes in every session and says, the fund. The reality is, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that in the last two biennium, the fund has ended with an ending balance of over $1.5 million. Okay, the money's there. The money's been there. Every session, Mr. Campbell comes in and says, you're going to break the fund, but somehow the fund ends up with the money at the end of the session. So Plan B, Mr. Chairman, and I can, you know, tell you what sections would do that, would be to say, hey, we're going to spend 190 in the first year, 160 in subsequent years, out of that money for the purposes of the interlock. Now, one thing I do need to address about the testimony, and that's the suggestion that we should just continue the study that began in the last 2 years and now has had some 130 people go through it. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's not an option. The vendor is leaving if we do not expand this. They've told me, and I, this figure is certainly exaggerated, but they've said that they've spent several $1 million in tulip cost here in the state based on commitments from the past that there'd be a small number to begin with and a larger number would follow. We intentionally kept the numbers small. We didn't want it to be quite as small as it was, ended up smaller than we wanted it to be, so that we wouldn't have adverse effects on the whole system. But in any case, Mr. Chairman, if you recede to the original printed bill, what is going to happen is that the vendor and the only one who's prepared to provide the services at this point is going to pull the plug and go, and there will be no continuation of the pilot project, and there will be no interlocks in Oregon. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't see that for this committee as an option. The plan C, then, Mr. Chairman.
So plan B is...
Plan B is just take the money out of the fund.
And how much is there in the fund?
At the end of the last biennium, there was $1,575,000 in the fund. At the end of the preceding biennium, there was $1,682,000. The estimates of A and D are that at the end of this biennium, there's going to be $1,094,000. However, I point out
what we call ending balance. But who's
ending balance? And I have the information provided to me by A and D, which
plan
I can
C.
certainly provide to the chair. Plan C, Mr. Chairman, is to make a change and an increase in the amount of the assessment that's levied against the people who are convicted and diverted. And that is to make a $20 increase in the amount that they have to pay. Now, that would more than pay for the cost of the interlock program for the convictees. And if the committee has concerns about the stability of the fund, it would as well protect the fund. So I can, Mr.
And leave the A&D program.
Mr. Chairman, I have leaving the diversion program and leaving the evaluator program alone completely for this biennium.
Representative Bryan.
Ed, the vendor you referred to, is that Guardian? Are they the only vendor for this type of device?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryan, they're currently the only vendor who's operating in this part of the country. There are other vendors who could possibly do it, but there are none who have the national experience or the training and who are in this part of the country that could do it. So it's within the realm of the possible that another vendor could be found, but the only way that we enticed Guardian, as it were, while they were interested in selling their product, obviously, but whether we were able to get them to undertake a project of a very small number of devices here was to say that the number of devices was going to be expanded if the test was successful, that we anticipated the legislature would expand it. So there is, Mr. Chairman, I think, no other vendor, and Representative Bryan, no other vendor who is going to be prepared to come in to provide the limited number of devices that a simple extension of the program would provide.
Let's, my reaction to this is, Mr. Leek, and I hate to, is that the two proposals need to be thought out a little bit more, or I don't know if the committee's ready to move right now. We're at five right now, too. So what we'll probably do is reschedule this again. And see what the reaction is of the various interest groups and go on from there.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might point out that on the 30th of June, the authority under the previous act expires. And so the everything shuts down on the 30th of June, absent a signature from the governor.
But we need an emergency clause on it, too.
Indeed, Mr. Chairman, that is in the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Why don't we shift now to close hearing on 131. Why don't we do the two parole board bills, then we'll shift over to public defender and 1065. But let's do the two parole board bills, Senate Bill 123. And Senate Bill 254. Mr. Fotz is here on both these bills. Nobody's signed up.
I move them.
Yeah. Gosh. Let's try to just a little bit.
Oh, wait a minute. Making me use that.
That's any bomb.
Will not consider this one. Will not consider this
one. Well, I may not want to move this.
Mr. Potts, why don't you start on 123?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Vern Fotz, chairman of the Board of Parole, and also chairman of the Advisory Commission on Prison Terms and Parole Standards, and I'm speaking in that capacity on Senate Bill 123. Senate Bill 123 addresses the manner by which the board sums consecutive sentences in setting prison terms, and it maximizes the time given persons with serious crimes like rape, assault, sodomy, arson, similar kinds of assaultive crimes, while allowing us to limit impact on prison space by persons or for persons with much less serious crimes like theft in the first degree, burglary two, driving offenses, and so forth. This bill represents a compromise with the Senate, leaves us with a workable but acceptable and acceptable method for dealing with consecutive sentences, and it is, in effect, a law that's in use at this time. We're asking only that we repeal the sunset provision from the 1987 session, that we omit the language that would repeal the section giving us direction for summing consecutive sentences.
How does this relate to sentencing guidelines? Just give me...
Well, it does not.
Why do you need it, then?
We need it because we will continue to have responsibility for setting prison terms for people who commit their crimes on or before the effective date of sentencing guidelines. That's going to mean, for example, that if sentencing guidelines takes effect in September or November, as is now proposed, that we'll continue setting prison terms for people up until probably October or November of 1990. And so we will still need this consecutive sentencing authority to do that.
And then
sentencing guidelines will address only those people whose crimes are committed on or after the effective date of sentencing guidelines. And the Board of Parole will continue to have authority and responsibility for what's known as the stock population, that is, those people whose crimes are committed on or before, excuse me, prior to the effective date of guidelines.
Okay, so this just fills the gap.
It's a continuation, that's right. It fills the gap. It allows us to carry on with consecutive sentences, as we have been doing over the past 2 years. No change in existing mechanism at all.
Representative Clark.
If sentencing guidelines are repealed, then this becomes permanent.
We need
authority.
This. Very much so.
Any further questions, Mr. Fotz, on the... Okay, why don't we shift over to 254, then?
Senate Bill 254 is a housekeeping measure that allows us somewhat greater, or allows us to be more efficient in the setting of prison terms. It will allow us authority to conduct teleconference hearings at my discretion. It will allow us to set prison terms administratively when a prisoner is sentenced to less than 15 years on a non-person-to-person offense and when he or she waives their right to a hearing. It will give us some more flexibility in the scheduling of initial prison term hearings depending on the length of the prisoner's sentence, and it will defer setting an initial parole release date for 90 days rather than 30, pending receipt of psychiatric or psychological reports or other information that is essential to formulating release decisions. It's a fairly straightforward bill. I think the major issue here for me is that some of the inmates at Eastern are complaining that we are not now conducting face-to-face hearings with them. They're interested in going to court over this. If we are ultimately required to conduct face-to-face hearings in every instance, we're going to be moving all over the state at incredible cost to not just to the board but to the state. This allows us, this puts
good
in...
Bill. Good bill.
Okay?
Good bill. As soon as we get five here, we'll show you how good it is. Yeah, they're looking right now. Thank
Does
you
my
partners.
Vote count?
No.
Why don't we shift now? Let's shift over to 2154. Mr. Babcock, why do we need 2154?
Mr. Chairman, other members of the subcommittee, you've already approved House Bill 2154. It is a housekeeping or house cleaning or whatever bill that was contained in Senate Bill 283 that's presently in the Ways and Means and probably will die because there are some funding provisions on 283. That will cause problems with that bill. This bill would allow us, or it would codify the legislation that allows us to process habeas corpus proceedings, all post-conviction proceedings, misdemeanor appeals, and psychiatric reviews that we have been doing for a period of 2 years already. The Ways and Means Committee has already appropriated $579,000, and they're holding that up pending the review by this committee of of the authority to do this.
Okay, I'm very familiar with this, and I'm as a I do not believe that anyone is opposed to this bill. Mr. Linden is not Mr. Linden at this moment. We've shifted our is neutral on the bill. So why don't, unless there's some questions of you, John?
How about, does this have a Ways and Means referral on?
No, the Ways and Means already acted.
Already on.
Yeah, they've already acted.
Yeah. Yes, so they've got the money down there, so it doesn't need to.
The money part of the bill?
It's in Ways and Means.
But this was different in the sense that it all started in Ways and Means, and that's why the pilot program was set up at the first of the last biennium, they've approved the funds, but they're waiting for a policy-making decision. Like I say, you've already really, I think you've passed on this same bill.
You're already doing this, aren't you?
Pardon?
You're already doing this?
Yeah, I think you've already, under 280, on Senate Bill 283, you've already done it, really.
But also, currently, Harris Matarazzo, I'm the administrator of the pilot program, working with Mr. Babcock. The 1987 legislature established this program, and we've been doing it. There are some problems if something happens to 283 or this bill doesn't get passed to allow us to keep doing what we're doing. Currently, ORS 161-250 prohibits the state public defender from doing habeas corpus cases, for example. A 1987 budgetary note created our program, and so potentially there's a conflict. I don't work.
Okay.
I'm not a state public defender. I'm a private attorney, but there are some potential problems, so we'd like to get these addressed.
Is that right? Is that clear, Representative Bryan?
Well, it is. I was just going to ask, thank you, Mr. Chairman, if this bill passes and for some reason the funding isn't actually come out and get approved, what happens?
Well, the funding has been approved.
To what degree?
To the fullest. It's 200 or 500.
You mean it's been voted on by the full Ways and Means Committee?
I don't know
by
about
the House and the Senate.
I don't know whether it's been voted on by the full House or full Committee on Ways and Means.
It hasn't been approved.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. It'd just be the subcommittee, as far as I know.
Is this part of your budget?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a decision package in our budget. Previously, it was a pilot program.
I might add.
It's on the list.
If you went ahead and said if they didn't approve the funding, then of course it would go belly up as of July 1st of this year.
My understanding of this is that, Chair, is that it allows the Public Defender's Office to do what they've been contracting out or court appointed out. So technically speaking, it should save some money, maybe.
We have. I attached. You haven't had a chance to look at it.
Is that an appropriate statement?
Okay. Yeah, I've attached to.
Mr. Linden, get up here, Rick.
Yeah, I've attached to.
Come on, Mr. Linden.
In a handout showing a savings in these programs, with the exception of psychiatric review.
Mr. Linden, you for or against the bill? Tell us about the bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. you have not seen this bill. The Senate Judiciary Committee saw Senate Bill 283 and sent it to Ways and Means, and it is probably not going to get heard down there. We are basically neutral on this question of whether or not the state public defender ought to do what they've been get statutory authority to continue doing what they're doing, which is to handle the habeas, misdemeanor, and other types of cases that they're doing under the pilot program. No problem with that issue. There are larger issues involved in Senate Bill 283 and in this bill from our perspective, and that has to do with if you're going to expand the jurisdiction of state public defender, we would suggest that you look at consolidating the administration of appellate indigent defense in that agency at the same time. What happens is that right now there's a statute that says the state public defender provides services in appellate cases except when they're unable to serve. And unable to serve has been defined by the State Public Defender Committee, which is an independent committee in the sense that they set policy for that office. The Chief Justice appoints him, but that's the end of his... Able to serve allows cases to fall into the Indigent Defense Fund that we administer by default, because able to serve is defined as, do you have enough staff, do you have enough money? So the cases fall into the Indigent Defense Fund by default. They become part of our larger deficit problem. I think there are some efficiencies that could be realized if you centralize the provision and administration of appellate indigent defense services in the state public defender. That's one of the changes that our proposed amendments would do. It would provide the SPD does everything unless they have a conflict of interest. Another thing that our amendments would do would be to provide that the present pilot project has the state public defender providing services in the Marion County institutions, and we think that if that's working well here, it ought to be expanded to the other state institutions. And lastly, we suggest that the budgetary responsibility for the cost of state public defender consulting with trial counsel be shifted from the Indigent Defense Fund that we administer to the state public defender budget. All of this would cost money. We estimate that if those three changes were made, the Indigent Defense Fund that we administer would not spend about $1 million that has been appropriated, but that $1 million would need to be shifted to Mr. Babcock's office, and we have no problem doing that. Both budgets, the Judicial Department and the State Public Defender, are in the Public Safety Subcommittee and have not been finally acted on by Ways and Means. So if you're amenable to the changes we're suggesting, this bill could go there. We could have a transfer of the funds, and what we'd be doing would be centralizing the administration of the appellate Indigent Defense Program, just as the administration of the trial court Indigent Defense Program is in the Judicial Department.
Mr. Babcock, reaction.
Well, I think, first of all, if you're talking about a funding problem, and I think the Ways and Means Committee, or the Subcommittee on Ways and Means, took the position on the ability to serve provision and the additional costs from obtaining the assistance of other, or paying the lawyers who were helping us, this was going to just enhance aggravate the existing problems we already have in having to revert trial appeals to the counties for court appointments. So it's just a matter right now of taking care of the first things first. And this, of course, would be the pilot program. Right now, we're not reverting any cases in the area of the pilot program, which this bill only deals with. And we have no intention of doing so. But probably the more important thing is the fact that we have been in operation for 2 years, and the sheets that I've handed you shows that we are doing two things that the Ways and Means Committee and the legislature was concerned about in the first place.
Are you for the proposed amendments or against them?
I'm opposed to them.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely opposed to them. I right now,
right up front, right now.
Yeah, the most important thing, again, like I say, is to continue this particular pilot program, because we're saving money and we're providing better representation.
If I might add also that this bill, again, as Mr. Babcock said, would allow...
We're running out of time. Go
okay,
ahead.
It'll be very quick. What allows us to continue doing what we're doing. The compromise bill is in before the Senate, Senate Ways and Means, actually came out of the Judiciary, and you know that bill, I don't know what's going to happen to that bill, but we need this bill now. And if that bill comes and is voted on by the legislature and is enacted, that's fine also. But we need something in the meantime to fall back on.
Mr. Chairman, if I can have just one last question.
I'm running out of time, everybody. I'm really losing my Republicans here.
Okay.
I've got two bills I have to get out, and I've got one bill that represents voters here that I'm probably not going to get to because you've got a caucus at 4.
I'm done.
Okay. You just need this bill. You want to send it to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Okay, now Representative Bryan, Representative Baum.
If you could recommend do pass and then...
Yeah.
And let Ways and Means...
We'll just get this down to Ways and Means.
Yeah, my only question is about the amendments and so forth. I'm not sure on those.
I'm not going to force the amendments on Mr. Babcock today, and I don't have time to sit here and work out something with him,
Mr. Chairman, this is an area where we have an agency that's able to flop costs into the Indigent Defense Fund with no control whatsoever, and we're just attempting to address that.
The Ways and Means Committee can handle that.
Okay, let's hear this again next week. I'm sorry, I just can't do it now. I just can't do it. I've got to get to the two parole board bills, Senate Bill 123 and Senate Bill 254. The chair would move Senate Bill 123 to the full committee. Do pass unamended. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Baum?
Yes.
Bryan?
Yes.
Flory?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Mannix?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye. Chair moves Senate Bill 254 to the floor. Do pass unamended. For discussion, clerk, call roll.
Senator Bryan?
Aye.
Flory?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Mannix?
Aye.
Baum?
Yes.
Chair Mason?
Aye. Ladies and gentlemen, the other bills, I apologize. I've lost my
my Republicans, and I've lost my quorum. We'll try to hear him Thursday of next week. Okay. Any objection? We're adjourned. Yes.